What's up, heretics? Welcome to the Religion of the Speed podcast, the podcast for car nerds by car nerds. I'm Matt Overstreet.
And I am Chris Huffman, and I'm loving that intro.
Thank you. I was thinking about it the other day, because it was really at the track. I was thinking about how pretty much everybody I know that's in the car scene is a giant nerd.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, being a car nerd just means you enjoy finding as much obscure information that is only useful to this hobby.
Right.
Yeah.
But then I think that, like, transfers into, like, a lot of them are into anime and video games and what we're going to talk about later, 3D printers or computers or shit like that, you know?
That's true. That Z3 driver at Track Attack started using metaphors she started using RPG metaphors to describe life anxiety.
I mean, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was like, oh, I know exactly what you mean.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're all nerds. We all know this terminology now.
Right. She was like, it's like when you walk into a room and, you know, in a video game and the music changes. And there's three potions.
You got to pick the right one.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was just a weird observation I made. Like, it just seemed like all of the freaks and geeks, if you will, back in the day, a large portion of them kind of got into the car scene.
Yeah, they did. They did, especially when we go to the track.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you go to the car meets, there's a lot of people who are doing it to kind of, they see it as a way to be cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of kids out there, though, that are giant nerds, too.
Yeah, which
like,
is good.
Like, with anime stickers all over their fucking cars, anime boobs everywhere.
There's so many waifu stickers on cars.
I know, I don't know when that started.
I saw one guy who even had, he got a vanity plate that said waifu. Yeah.
Like, I was talking to a younger guy, Brian Soto. He has a Fiesta ST as well, because he had some waifu stickers on his shit. Well, they were straight up like hentai stickers on his shit.
Wow.
But kids are doing that now.
Yeah.
And that's like normal?
You know, I have to say, I went to Catholic school, so seeing people who are more open about that is a good thing, because society in general is becoming less uptight.
I mean, this is true. I'm all for that. But it's just like, I'm just looking at it like, I could never embrace that part of this culture. I am going to be 40 years old in 5 years. Like, that is...
Wow, that's a depressing thought.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't frame it that way. But it's just like, man, I'm coming up on 36 in a few months. So, but anyways, the point was, everybody's, for the most part, is a nerd. Like, to get away from that, you get into like the drag racing scene or muscle car scene. Those guys, not so much.
Yeah, yeah, the older car guys.
Yeah, or even just like the guys that are into big V8s. In general, those guys aren't nerds.
That's true. I guess those guys are more bros.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like they want to go to the gym and have loud cars and muscle and brr.
And they care more about looking cool than actually like being into it.
Right.
And that's not to say there aren't people who have V8s who are totally actually into racing and are nerds.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We're just, like, you know, summarizing. There's plenty of people with Honda Civics that are more bros than nerds.
Absolutely. Plenty of vape billowing out of WRX windows.
Right, exactly. But I'm just saying, in general, it seems like the tuner scene really rose up in the same time as the nerd scene, and now we have this.
Yeah. Yeah, so. And you know, I really loved that in high school, too, because everybody just wanted to get together and shoot the shit.
Right.
And they were just building the best thing they could afford.
Yeah, and that's what we're all about here.
Yeah, absolutely.
And before we get into anything, we just were at the track last weekend. Was it last weekend?
Yeah, it feels like an eternity, but it actually was last weekend.
Yeah, it was like 3 days ago.
Yeah, it's Wednesday. We were there on Saturday.
Man.
No, Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday. Yeah, time is just... Kids, or I say kids, anybody under like 28 is a kid to me now at this point. I am old enough to be saying that. I have earned this right. You will too eventually. But yeah, anybody under 28, just wait. Just wait. Or maybe it's just like the times we're living in too are also making things a blur.
It is. I mean, between juggling a day job and listening to the news or avoiding the news.
Right.
You know, time does creep.
Yeah.
Unless you're doing something fun. I felt like I was at the track for 2 minutes.
Right, yeah.
And I was there for, you know, we were there all morning, or all afternoon.
All afternoon, yeah, because we had the afternoon session.
Yeah, which I love the PM sessions, because you know I like to sleep in.
Oh, I love it too. I got up at 9 o'clock, and then just like casually drove to the track, got set up, did my runs, drove back. I'm like, that's how it should be. I hate waking up at 4 in the morning and drive down to the track and do race car shit.
Yeah, because that seems to be the trend, right? You have to be there before the ass crack of dawn.
Right. And it's like, I kind of get it, because if you're going to be spending all day there and everything like that, but...
Yeah.
It's just like, man, I like sleeping.
Yeah, so I am much. A night owl.
Yeah.
I'm not a morning person.
You are worse than me. I actually was a night owl until COVID.
Oh, until you guys had to quarantine.
Yeah, and then I was like, well, I don't know, I'm bored. It's 10 o'clock. Guess I'm going to bed. So I still don't, like, you know, I don't wake up at like 4 in the morning or something like that, but it's still usually like 8, 9 o'clock at the latest.
Just that, and just naturally.
Yeah, just naturally now.
Yeah,
so it used to be 11, 12, 1 maybe. I asked my dad how many times he came and woke me up when I was in high school at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, are you going to get up today? Yeah.
Like, no, just wake me up tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just sleep the whole day away.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's funny, when I had to quarantine, I just lost all sense of time altogether.
Yeah.
I just kind of slept when I was tired. Had nothing to do with the sun because I didn't go outside anyway.
Right, yeah. Just might as well draw the shades and...
Yeah, because you're in a dungeon anyway.
Yeah, live underground. It's fine.
Yeah, we're mole people.
Anyways, I don't know. We got on talking about that, but... Track Attack. So, yeah, we went and did our first event of the season. And it was nice to get out back out to the track.
It was a lot of fun. And, you know, last year I was pretty consistently at the bottom of the rankings. And this time I was pretty comfortably in the middle.
Hey.
So I felt good about that.
Yeah, no, that's an improvement, man.
Yeah, yeah. Good tires make a massive difference.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, your first, when you came with the BRZ on the stock worn out tires,
the bald, right? Primus EHPs.
Yeah, it's like, you aren't going to do shit for lap times with that.
Yeah, yeah, I just slid around and had fun.
Yeah, which is, hey, there's nothing wrong with that either.
Right, right.
That's kind of what the BRZ was meant for.
Yeah, absolutely, especially that's why they put Prius tires on it.
Yeah.
But with good tires, I mean, that thing was awesome. And, you know, the rear end actually came out on track, but that was, you know, that's just more fun.
Right. I'm sorry, I missed it. What corner was that?
It was that last really sharp right-hander before you went around that sweeping left turn that ended the race.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was like a 180 tight right-hander.
Yeah, really low speed with a lot of turn.
Yeah, coming from a very high speed section.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Which, I actually was in third gear through that section, which for Track Attack is pretty damn fast.
So did you have to heel toe down to second as you're braking for that corner?
Yeah.
So because I started to peg when I was probably, you know, 40, 50 feet from my braking zone.
Yeah.
And I was like, do I shift or not? So I shifted up to third one time, heel-toed back down to second, and I was about a second slower.
Yeah, for your car, because it makes so its power up top and is very peaky,
yeah.
I would say, yeah, bounce off the rev limiter for a couple seconds is fine.
Just keep it there.
Yeah, for the Fiesta, though, it makes all of its power down low.
Because you've got boost.
Yeah, well, and just that's just the way the engine is designed. It just makes its power down low. Because it was designed to be, you know, that engine was designed to go in escapes.
Oh, okay, so it was torquey. So kind of like the KA story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was actually short shifting into third going onto that straight, because if I stayed in second, I was bouncing off rev limiter for too long, and yeah, I don't have as much power up top.
Right.
So it's more worth it for me to go into third and torque my way through that whole straight.
So you were actually, it was worth it for you to lose the time on the shifts.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat, because yeah, I was like, because I mean, I can downshift pretty fast, but not, you know, not fast enough.
Oh man, I can heel toe shift, like if I'm on the street or if I'm driving a canyon.
Yeah,
heel toe shift all day. When I'm on track though, and you're braking, threshold braking as hard as you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trying to heel toe shift is a much different thing.
You know, I feel like it's easier when you're braking harder though, because you can blip the throttle really fast.
I disagree.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
I think my feet just get messed up because I'm, you know, I'm braking the very last second.
So are you firewall mounted or floor mounted gas pedal?
Firewall.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure mine is firewall too. I need to double check that.
Yeah. Yeah. Most cars I've ever driven are firewall mounted. I don't like floor mounted that much.
It throws you off.
It really does.
And like you actually have to use your heel to heel toe.
Right. Yeah. Like my sim setup is all floor mounted pedals. And I have a hell of a time with that. Like, I'm actually going to, like, probably mount up a rig to flip these pedals and hang them.
Nice.
Because I'm just like, I can't get this down. I don't know how GTI owners do it.
Yeah, well, the GTI was, I drove a Mark VI, firewall-mounted brake pedal, floor-mounted gas pedal.
Mm-hmm. That's why a lot of the German cars do it.
Yeah, which is, when, like I said, when you're trying to heel toe, that throw, because your right foot has to behave like 2 feet.
Yeah.
So that's the weirdest thing, because you have to move your heel and maneuver it.
Right. It's legit heel toeing.
Yeah.
Like, the Fiesta, I don't heel toe it. I like big toe, little toe it.
Exactly. I use the ball of my foot and I just kind of roll my ankle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I don't know, when I'm on track, I have a very hard time getting that right for whatever reason.
I could see that. Well, and you've got less time to react, yeah. You know, you wanted the pressure to do it perfectly is like there. Right.
Yeah, for sure. Like I totally messed it up on my third run and like, just like kind of blew past the corner and then like, I don't know, even I can't hardly explain it because it was like, I went to go heel toe and it didn't work, but then my foot was off the clutch. So then I like almost ground it in the second. So I had to put the clutch back in. It was a disaster.
Oh, I hate missing a shift in the middle of a corner when you're on track. Cause then you feel like you're lost for a split second.
Yeah.
You're like, hang on, what gear am I in? What gear am I trying to go into?
Right. And it, yeah, just that little bit, like it throws you off so much and it's so weird. Cause like I was saying on the street, you make a little mistake. Like, oh, oops.
Right.
But when you're pushing it and you're just, especially for track attack,
because, yeah.
Like, if you're driving a circuit and you're doing, like, wheel-to-wheel racing, generally you're not pushing as hard as you can. It's a bad idea to do that, in fact, because then you're more prone to mistakes.
That makes sense.
And if you're racing for 30 laps, you can't make mistakes.
You have to save the car.
Right, exactly. That, too. You know, right. You don't want to overheat it. You don't want to overheat your brakes or your tires or anything like that.
Yeah.
For track attack, which is glorified autocross
right.
with some more speed, basically, you know... I mean, we were separated by hundredths of a second in the top five.
Yeah, everybody's under a minute.
Yeah.
A lot of people are under 50 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when you're out there for that short of an amount of time, literally every move you make counts.
Yeah. So, yeah, you make one mistake and that just rolls into another mistake because you don't have time to reset.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and then you have to go sit in the pits and think about it for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
While you wait to go again.
Well, luckily, since they've been doing that split morning and afternoon session, it is only like, I don't know, like maybe 10 minutes between runs, 10
yeah.
to 15. It's not,
yeah,
it's not
say,
too much.
Yeah, I'd say 20 at the most this last time because since it was raining, not as many people showed up.
Right.
On the nice weather, I'm worried that that's going to really spread out.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised because usually the first event of the season is the busiest. And the last event of the season is where the least people show up.
Yeah.
Cars break, people just get tired or going, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Then over winter, everybody's like gets all excited. Like, oh, yeah, track attack, let's go. And usually the first event is just, it's pure chaos, tons of cars.
Yeah, I really have to thank that crappy weather.
Yeah.
And it was fun because if you're running track tires and the track gets greasy... You've really got to adjust.
Yeah, it didn't rain too much though, so
yeah, it just sprinkled a bit.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, my last lap was my fastest, so it didn't really affect the track too much.
That's nice, good.
Yeah. Although, you know, my last lap, I also hit a cone, so I would have been in second place for that event in my class, but yeah, I hit a cone.
Where'd you end up?
Fifth.
Hey, I mean, fifth on the first one going out, you're shooting for a podium. That's not bad.
No, it's not bad, but that's like, I've been cursed to fourth and fifth all last year. And I was like, I came out there and hit a good lap time. I was first for like a while. And I was like, yeah, we're doing it. And then, of course, all the people driving that CRX, you know, the three drivers that car has now.
So all three of those drivers were first, second, and third?
Yeah.
Wow.
The CRX is fast, man.
Yeah, and is that a K-swap CRX?
Nope.
B-swapped?
It might be a D-series in that thing.
So it's like a, probably not the factory D-series, but like a D-series.
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
Maybe it's B-swapped. I know it doesn't make that much power. I know that much.
But it doesn't weigh anything.
It weighs nothing. It has 245 wide tires. Like, I'm pretty sure you hit the gas and you never let off the gas the entire time. Like, and you just turn and it turns.
Do some left foot braking. That's about it.
Yeah, that car is ridiculous, so...
That's what I was saying to Hamza. I was like, man, I'm glad I'm not in you guys' class. You guys have to deal with all these Hondas.
Yeah. It's true. The fucking Hondas, man. But hey, we're making progress. We'll have a Ford on the podium eventually here.
Nice. Just before you get a Toyota.
Right, exactly. Before we talk about that real quick, to get ready for the season, I did get the BC coilovers on the Fiesta and some new, brand new RT660 Falcons. Which, man, those went up in price.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't priced them since about a year and a half ago.
Uh-huh. That's like...
Well, I guess no, it was about a year ago.
Yeah.
My tires aren't that old.
Yeah, because I bought mine, the first set, like 2 years ago.
Okay.
And it was about $500 for the set, I remember.
Yeah.
Same size, Same tire rack that I bought it from, $700 now.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully that's just wartime production issues.
Well, what I think it is Falcon came in, and they were kind of the joke of the 200 treadwear tire for a while. They had the RT615K, which was, it's not a great tire. It's okay if you're doing like budget racing and you just need a cheap tire.
Yeah.
Like, but it was an old design at that point. And then the RE71R from Bridgestone was the king. So Falcon came up with the RT660, and they wanted to price it competitively and prove, you know, because nobody was going to give them a chance if they made it super expensive.
Right.
So, and then everybody got it, and they're like, holy shit, this tire is good. And yeah. Then Bridgestone was like, oh, we're not making the RE71 anymore.
Oh, wow. So that really played in their favor. And now if you go down there, everybody running top times pretty much runs that tire.
Yeah, it's on RT660s. Yeah. Either that or Advan AO52s. But those are like, those are even more expensive.
Wow.
That probably would have been like $900 to $1,000 a set for those tires.
You know, I haven't priced the Continental 200 treadwear set.
So I've heard those aren't as good for the type of racing we do.
Because it's a harder compound that lasts longer.
Yeah. Yeah, they're meant for more like budget endurance racing.
Okay. Okay. So the Lemons guys.
Yeah, exactly. Your Lemons, your, what's the word I'm looking for? Not World Time Attack. What is it? World Racing League, WRL. They do like some endurance races.
Okay, okay. But that way you're just not changing tires as often while you're on the track.
Right,
but you exactly. Still have that 200 treadwear grip.
Yep. Yeah, I've heard the RT660s kind of wear out pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, mine I can tell a difference. Like, even though I've got tread, I guess they've heat cycled enough times.
Yeah.
That my rear end will come out now. When I got them, when they were new, it was like they were magic.
Yeah. Yeah, that having a brand new set, I think that really helped too.
Yeah.
Because I never really took heat cycling too seriously, but I think after my last set of RT660s, I'm like, you know, I need to stop driving these on the street.
Yeah, just you're wearing them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I've stopped driving the BRZ when it snows.
Yeah.
And that really helps.
Well, yeah, because that tire's not meant for that.
Yeah, it was funny. I actually tried to back it down the driveway with the RT660s. It wouldn't even move.
Yeah, I believe it.
It would not even move out of its spot.
Yeah, there's just the tires like, what is this white stuff?
Yeah.
Like, I don't
understand
yeah,
it.
Yeah, tire's hard as a rock at that point.
And it's funny because my former roommate, my buddy who was living with me at the time until a few months ago, he also has a BRZ, but he has, you know, some weather tires, not even all weather tires.
Just, yeah, like, better.
Yeah, summer tires that yeah. have some tread to them. And he just, yeah, he just drove to work, no problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and my car wouldn't move out of its spot.
That's probably a good thing, because you didn't need to take that on the road.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my truck is working, has been working for most of this winter.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need to eventually get that truck all tuned up and whatnot, if we're going to keep it.
Yeah, I want to keep it. I mean, it's a four-speed, four-wheel drive. So.
Is it four-speed?
It's four-speed with overdrive.
Oh, okay, yeah, right.
So, yeah,
it's basically
a five-speed.
Yeah.
But, you know, the number five isn't there on the shifter, just the overdrive
OD.
Symbol.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that now, because my dad had a slightly earlier for the boxy Ford.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was the same way, four-speed with an overdrive.
Yeah, and it's like, why does it say four? Yeah.
Right, yeah.
But, if we get the brakes going on that thing, I mean, that truck, you know, it's never stranded me anywhere. It's done a really good job of braking once I park it. So
hey, that's
have
ideal.
To give it that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because then we can start towing shit.
Yeah, we can tow shit. We can haul some parts. Like, right. That would be excellent.
Yeah. But yeah, we were talking, or you briefly mentioned there, we'll get away from just reminiscing about 3 days ago when we were racing. I can't wait to get back on track. I'm so excited for this season. But because, of course, Toyota finally did it. I can finally talk about it. We have some specs.
We have some specs on the GR Corolla?
The GR Corolla is real, and it is coming out soon.
God, that's a great hero shot, too.
Right? Drifting around the corner in the rain?
Yeah.
It really sums up, if you go just to toyota.com/upcomingvehicles/GR Corolla, or just search GR Corolla, it'll bring up this page. The promo shots are really good. It's like the GR Corolla on a rainy track, drifting. It's like, this perfectly sums up what the GR Corolla is. It's an all-weather, do-it-all, race rally car.
Right, right. And they could have done something kind of goofy, like showing it doing a rally jump.
Right.
This is a much better representation.
Yeah. Because this is like, you know, they're not trying to advertise this car as a sports car. It's a rally car.
Yeah.
You know, and that's exactly what I wanted out of it. I mean, you know me. I wanted the Yaris. I wanted the littler car, but...
Yeah. Sadly, we've got... But hey, this thing looks awesome.
It's and it makes hatchback, more power than the Yaris.
Does, but it's the same engine, right?
It's the same engine, but the factory output is now 300 horsepower. The Yaris is like 260.
Wow. Just as Subaru discontinues the STI, too.
Right? Everybody's kind of joking about that. But like, oh, well, Subaru stopped making the STI, so Toyota did.
Yep. Yeah, they made it with three cylinders and the same power.
Right? And 1.6 liters, not 2.5.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I kind of went off on Johnny Lieberman. You know who Johnny Lieberman is?
No.
He works for Motor Trend. He's one of their like car review guys.
Okay.
He was on Smokey Tire podcast a lot. But just like him and Matt Farah both, like they both kind of seem to get away from like cars that people care about. And now they're just like, I'm buying super expensive whiskey and watches and Lamborghinis. Look at all these Lamborghinis. And like, no,
that
like,
must be nice. Right. I mean,
well, I don't think he makes that kind of money. He just lives that lifestyle.
Oh, well then that's a shitty way to live.
Right. Yeah. But,
it's not worth enjoying expensive whiskey if you're worried about debt.
Right.
Yeah.
I think he just hangs out with a lot of rich people. Anyways, I don't care. I stopped following him cause they just, that's not my lifestyle anymore. Yeah. So, but he made a comment about, he's like, I don't get why everybody is so hyping up the Corolla GR when nobody cared about the last generation STI. And I'm like, okay, there's multiple reasons for that.
Yeah.
One, this is a Toyota. So it's actually going to, like, I'm not going to put head gaskets and turbos on this thing every 60,000 miles.
Yeah, it's actually going to be reliable. Although right. I'm interested to see how the three-cylinder tolerates modification.
So there was a picture going around the internet of the block of the GR Corolla, whatever that engine code is. I can't, surprised I don't know that engine code. But the cylinder walls on that thing, it's an open deck engine.
Okay.
But it might as well be a closed deck engine. It's like a 1-inch thick cylinder wall on that thing.
Oh, wow. Okay. So there's a lot of room for abuse.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, most cars, to give you an example, are like 1/4-inch cylinder walls.
Wow. Okay.
Like these things are beefy.
So I guess putting a three-cylinder engine in the engine bay of a car that typically has a four-cylinder engine gives you a lot of room to play with.
Yeah, it's kind of a big three-cylinder, honestly. Probably not that much smaller than a four-cylinder. But yeah, those cylinder walls, though, you're not really going to have much issue with like the cylinder bores warping at all under pressure or anything like that. Like you get with a Subaru.
Nice. Yeah, because that's the issue. I mean, Subarus can't keep their heads on.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, there's guys in Australia that put a big turbo on a Yaris and made like 500 horsepower.
On factory internals?
Factory internals.
Wow!
Yeah, they finally blew a head gasket after pushing it for, I think, a little bit more than that. Because they were going until something failed.
But that means if you build this block, it could be a 600-700 horsepower motor.
Right? It's like, it seems like, you know, once somebody develops some ARP studs.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe a slightly better head gasket.
Yeah, some connecting rods, some pistons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous for a 1.6 liter engine.
The 1.6 liter three cylinder? Yeah. Yeah. You know. I mean, there was a time not long ago when 4G63s weren't making that much.
Right, exactly. So that's why I'm excited about this more than the Subaru. The Subaru is like, it's an old EJ. This is a new engine with new technology, direct injection, you know, and I like the progress.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing. That's why people are excited. This is new.
Right.
Toyota hasn't come out. Well, they've come out with some exciting stuff, but they haven't come out with anything completely in-house exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, a lot of people were upset that they teamed up with Subaru and BMW. And it's like, I get, hey, whatever gets sports coupes back in dealerships,
yeah,
I'm excited to see. But this is a completely in-house build.
Mm-hmm.
It's their motorsports division. And you're right, it's not an old EJ.
Yeah, and I think this, it goes back to, I compare this more to a Celica All-Track, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, God, I miss those.
Right?
Those were so cool, and I wish we'd gotten that GT4 and that next generation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because those were beautiful.
Yeah, they're awesome cars.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, this is kind of making up for it. Like, in my opinion, Toyota was always the best when they tried turbocharging.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they didn't try it enough.
Right? No, they didn't. But yeah. When they did with the, yeah, with the S, oh, God.
You had the 3S GTE.
3S GTE.
You had the 2J, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were motors that people still love. Like, people just recently started K-swapping these MR2s.
Right.
And that's just because the K is such a beast. It's not because the 3S isn't a good motor.
You're right. Even then, like, a lot of them are, like, swapping the MR2 Spider with the K-Series.
Right, because that never had the good motor in the States.
Right, you maybe got, like, a 2ZZ in that, which is a decent motor, but compared to a K,
right,
you can't compete.
Right, but no four-cylinder can.
Right, yeah. It's really hard to compete. That's, like, it's the LS of the four-cylinder world.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's people making 500 horsepower with crazy NA builds.
Yeah.
And I love the F. The F, I think, off the shelf is a better motor.
Yeah.
But if you're going to put a lot of money into it, the K is incredible.
Right. And then to go back to the GR Corolla, it's just like, to me, progressing technology is more interesting than than that old EJ. Not only that, if we want to talk about, you know, why do I like this better than STI, this is a hatchback.
Yes.
It instantly wins.
We haven't had a hatch STI since 2010.
Right.
And then everybody was pissed that it was only a hatch.
Yeah, right? These people can't... Like, well, I kind of get that coming from the Subaru crowd. The Subaru crowd expected a sedan.
They wanted a trunk.
Yeah.
But I still love the fact that there was an STI hatch. And, right. And now those... It's crazy. The Subaru crowd, it's like, okay, so... And I'm in the Subaru crowd.
Right.
But it's like when something's new, oh, they hate it because it's new.
Yeah.
Like the Baja truck or the Tribeca.
Yeah.
You know? Now those are cult classics.
Yeah.
Like
for some reason.
And you were telling me you hate the Tribeca.
Yeah, it's a piece of shit car. Yeah.
And the Bajas, you know, it's got a lot of character.
Yeah.
But they couldn't give these things away when they were new.
And now you're going to pay twice what you will for a Outback if you want to buy a Baja.
Absolutely. And it's the same thing with a truck bed.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing except they lopped off the back.
Right, right. It's, in fact, less useful in a lot of ways.
Right. So, yeah, there's the hatchback issue. There's the fact that it's a Toyota, and I mean, that's probably pretty much the only two. I think it looks better than the any STI we've had recently.
Well, and if they'd made a new STI off this current WRX, the new WRX chassis, I mean, it would have been hideous.
Right.
Like, imagine those plastic overfenders and the STI wing on the back.
Right, yeah. I don't think it would have worked.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's where I come from. Like, yes, I could get a 10-year-old STI hatch. It'd be pretty much the same performance as this.
You would.
Oh, that's the other thing. That STI hatch, though, would get, like, what, when it's tuned, maybe 15 miles of the fucking gallon?
Yeah, that thing wouldn't make good gas mileage. 15 might be optimistic, depending on how well you tune it.
Yeah, tuned STIs are terrible for gas mileage.
Yeah.
This will probably get 30 miles of the gallon.
You think with even a strong tune?
I think so.
It'd be interesting to see how this, because we really don't know very much, at least in the States, about tuning three cylinders.
No, not yet.
So I'm interested to see how that shakes out as far as reliability, big power, aftermarket support, and fuel economy, how it affects it when we mod.
Right. Because, well, at the end of the day, it's 1.6 liter. It is a bit of a bigger car, but direct injection really does, like, wonders. You can run things in, like, way leaner conditions with direct injection than you can traditional port injection.
Which will be really nice for being up here in the mountains.
Yeah, true. And it'll just be nice for gas mileage because then you can use less gas to go down the road.
Yeah, which now gas is ludicrously expensive. So.
Right? It's kind of coming down a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, prices of oil, the oil barrels have plummeted, but, you know, gas prices are just kind of hovering where they were.
Well, they realize people still buy it.
Yeah, I know.
Let's just keep making record profits. Oh, it's absolutely a racket.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to post something on the internet of, like, the article that was saying that Exxon is seeing its biggest profits ever right now.
Right, as the rest of the country starves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, yeah. But we had to raise gas prices because...
We had to make up for our profits during COVID.
Yeah, right.
It's like, can I make up for my stock losses during COVID?
No. Yeah. Anyways, we're not going to get too far into that this episode. We did a political episode. What was it? Was it the last one or the one before that?
It was a couple ago, but
we've done a few.
We got pretty dark. I was depressed at the end of that one.
Right. Let's just keep talking about how awesome the GR Corolla is. I mean, that's pretty much it. It's a three-cylinder, 300 horsepower, all-wheel drive. It can do 60% of the torque to the rear wheels.
Oh, that's excellent.
Right?
Yeah, so it's got a center diff then that's adjustable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a transfer case at the front. Okay. Attached to the front transmission. But okay. Yeah, center diff. So much like the Focus RS, you know, it could do drift mode. This is pretty much probably going to have its own version of drift mode, I would imagine. All the pictures show it drifting in the rain.
Yeah, and oh, look at that drifting behind a Supra. That's a great shot.
Right? And yeah. I love, like, the same with the STI, honestly. The STI hatch, I always loved how if you look at it from the back, you could see where the taillights ended, and then they expanded it out.
How it like grows?
The flares.
Yeah.
You know, and I love how it really does look like they took a regular Corolla and then just like stretched it.
Just made it muscular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that you can see where the stock Corolla is supposed to end and then it just kind of added onto it.
Like this is where it becomes a real fun Corolla.
Right.
And it's cool when it can send the power to the back wheels because the primary problem you have with all-wheel drive cars is understeer.
Yeah.
And I mean, Subarus are no stranger to that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because Subaru's got that symmetrical all-wheel drive.
Right, right. It's 50-50 if you've got a manual transmission.
Right. And I much rather have the 40-60. That's more like BMW all-wheel drive.
Oh, okay.
Which I think that might even be like, they could do like 80% or something. Like they might be able to do all of it to the back, actually.
Which makes sense. I mean, BMW is a rear-wheel drive company.
Right. But I do like driving, like, you know, all-wheel drive BMWs in the snow.
Right, because it's still fun.
Yeah, you can get it sideways, but then the front end kicks in and, like, helps you along.
Yeah, because you just need it to, like, get started going up a hill.
Right.
Because if you have grip, you're okay.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think this would be the perfect Colorado car. The only problem is, and I know I've talked a lot of big game, but I'm probably not going to buy this simply because it's probably going to be like $40,000.
And given the raise in the prices of everything, that's probably where it's going to be.
Well, and let's not, you know, discount the fact that every dealer is going to mark this up 10 grand.
Yes. Yeah. Not let anyone test drive it.
Right. So I'm sorry. I'm not paying 50 grand for a Corolla.
Right. Which is, I mean, reasonable when you can get a Supra for 50 grand.
Right. Even if it comes with a carbon fiber roof. I can't pay that kind of money for it.
That is really cool, though.
Right?
Yeah. Lower, I mean, because the car sits high up because it's a Corolla hatch.
Yeah.
So let's, you know, lower that center of gravity.
Right. Yeah. How much is that really going to save? I don't know. But also, I think the hood and the front doors are aluminum now.
Oh, wow. Okay. So they're really cutting a lot of weight up top.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, this isn't just, like, some tacked-on bullshit. Like, you know, Gazoo Racing, when they made the Yaris, they were saying, like, oh, there's, like, two parts that swap over to the base Yaris.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and it's not quite that intense with the Corolla, but it's still nice to see them do stuff like a hood and doors and stuff like that. Like, okay, we're taking this seriously.
Yeah, it's cool to see their motorsports division get their hands on all these vehicles.
Right.
Because they've done the GR86, now there's the GR Supra, we're going to have the GR Corolla.
Mm-hmm.
Still waiting for that MR2.
Right? I don't think we're going to get that anymore.
Yeah, I mean,
If we do, like I said before, I think it's going to move way up market.
Yeah, which is understandable. Yeah. And it'll probably be a Lexus.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I want to see another bespoke mid-engine chassis.
Sorry, I just had a thought. The MR2, if it comes back, is going to be a hybrid.
Okay.
Using this 3-cylinder motor and electric drive.
I'd be okay with that.
I could see them doing that.
That's like a miniature Lamborghini.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they want to move away from internal combustion, of course. Right. Or they want to show that EV technology or hybrid technology is still exciting. Why not do a supercar? I mean, I'm just thinking BMW i8. i8 has a 3-cylinder turbocharged motor and electric drive.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. And that thing is gorgeous.
I do like that. Yeah. I've heard they're not the best to drive.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not that interested in a lot of these luxury hybrids.
Right.
But I love when I see an i8 on the road.
Yeah.
Because it's just a pleasure to look at.
I still want to drive an i3.
Oh, the little city car?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a carbon fiber monocoque chassis.
Yeah, that's like a Lotus.
Right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Actually, duh. Not even like a Lotus. Those are aluminum.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, oh, the I thought the Exige had a monocoque carbon fiber chassis.
I don't know if that's aluminum.
Extruded. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a bunch of extruded aluminum pieces that are glued together.
Wow. British construction.
Yeah. Yeah, your car's glued together. How does that make you feel? I mean, don't get me wrong. Most cars are glued together these days. But
as the adhesive doesn't attract spiders.
Right? I think the i3 was like the first quote-unquote mass-produced carbon fiber monocoque chassis.
Wow.
Like, there's been other ones, but they're all super, like, you know, low production run supercars.
Yeah, you can't call a supercar mass production.
Right.
Yeah.
So it is cool in its own little sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I mean,
even with its little tiny motorcycle.
It's a good alternative to a smart car.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I'd rather do that than a smart car. Smart cars don't even get that great of gas mileage.
And they're not cheap.
No, they're not.
They're like new. They were like $15,000-$20,000.
Right.
And I mean, they do depreciate like crazy.
They do.
So you can get a used one for cheap.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have some fun with a used smart car one day.
I would be down. They're fun as hell to drive just because it is such a short wheelbase.
Yeah, it's tiny and it's rear-wheel drive.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize they were rear-wheel drive for a long time.
I want to drive one of those smart roadsters.
Yeah, we never got those here.
Yeah, but I would love a chance to drive one because it's like two of those three-cylinder engines put together to make a V6 and then they put it in the rear.
Did they? I thought it was still just a three-cylinder in that.
I think they did a V6 in that one. It was based on the other three cylinders.
Huh. I'll have to look that up. I thought it was just like a smart car three cylinder just in a really cool body.
Listeners, tell us if we're wrong.
Right? Which, even if it's just the three cylinder.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd own a Suzuki Cappuccino. That's a three cylinder.
That was so cool when we saw that one pull up at the car meet.
Right?
And it was so tiny.
Oh, they're so tiny.
Yeah.
I know. I don't fit in them at all, which is very sad.
You just need some goggles and just stick your head up over the
windshield. Right.
Duck if you roll over.
I would totally do that. All right. Well, I think that's enough swooning over the Corolla GR. It's coming out. We don't know price yet. We'll let you know when we know the price, and we'll let you know how disappointed we are when it's above $40,000. But
we'll road test one when we can.
Yes. Yes. I will do my best to try to get my hands on that car. I need to drive it. Cause that is the only car I can think of that I would possibly replace the Fiesta with.
I mean, that's huge praise. You love your Fiesta.
Yeah. Because it's the only car, in my opinion, that will do everything the Fiesta does with a little bit more, which is the all-wheel drive.
Yeah, with the all-wheel drive.
And plus 100 more horsepower.
Which you can't, you can't say anything about that.
Right.
Like, that'd be amazing. What class would that be in?
For racing?
For track attack? Yeah.
AA, probably.
Okay. So you'd be running with, WRXs.
Yep.
Okay.
The great part about the GR Corolla 2, though, it's a 1.6 cylinder, or it's 1.6 liter. So Club TR at GridLife is limited to 1.6 liters if you're turbocharged, or 2.5 liters if you're naturally aspirated.
You would dominate that.
Yeah, there's already been discussion on the forums about, like, that thing is going to be the car to have in Club TR.
Yeah, it's going to replace the S2000.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 300 horsepower.
Yeah, and all that torque.
And all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to dominate. Just stick a fucking set of sticky tires on there, some brake pads, and some brake fluid. Go out and dominate the fucking class.
Wonder how long till Gears and Gasoline gets one.
Right? I don't know. He's put too much money into that Civic at this point.
I mean, that Civic is sweet.
It is. So I don't think we're going to see that. But I do kind of expect GridLife to make either an exception for the GR Corolla in that class. Like, no GR Corollas.
Yeah.
Or they're going to limit tuning or boost levels.
Yeah, or tires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're either going to put a limit on it or just say, sorry, this is in street class.
Yeah.
Technically, it's 1,607 cc's. So technically, the GridLife rules say anything up to 1,600 cc's.
That's interesting.
So they could say that's in street class.
Sorry, it's 7 cc's too much.
Yeah, exactly. You're 0.007 liters over...
Do they make small D-stroker kits?
Right? Just put in that. Yeah, I don't know. What would you have to do that? You would have, to change, you would need a different crank. That's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
D-stroke it.
Yeah, and then you've opened up the engine.
Yeah, which you can't do that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see what they decide, but because that was kind of my thought when I saw all the specs for this. I'm like, dude, I buy that, put some tires on it, and just win trophies.
Yeah.
Like, left and right. Just don't even try.
I mean, it's probably going to take, like, a season or two of it dominating, just like with the Audi Quattro and WRC.
Right.
Before it's like, okay, sorry, you're banned, you're in the higher class now.
Right. So I am kind of sad about that because I really feel like I'm getting the Fiesta, like, to a point now where at GridLife Alpine Horizon, I might be able to podium.
Okay.
With those coilovers, even though, everybody has their opinion about BCs, they're also not my favorite coilovers, but the factory suspension on the Fiesta is just so improperly tuned.
You know, I didn't get to ask you, how do you like the BCs?
They're amazing.
Like, because that was your first event on them.
Yeah, I'm actually really loving these things. The only thing I would maybe want, I think I might want a little bit more spring rate
okay.
than what it came with. So I might be changing that out at some point. And I still got to play around with the dampening settings.
Yeah.
I haven't played around with it much. They're set pretty mid right now.
Yeah, I mean, you've got 30 levels of adjustment, so
right.
it makes it difficult to pick a level.
Yeah, I think I was at 16 and 10 front okay. and rear when I showed up.
Okay.
Which is pretty soft. But then I upped it to 19 and 13. And it made a. I got it set at, like, even right now when driving on the street, that's where I have it set at.
So can you adjust the rear dampening in the hatch?
No. It's actually a giant pain in the ass. It's at the top of the shock.
Okay.
And so I have to actually jack up the car to get enough room to get my hand up in there to adjust it.
So you have to adjust it from the bottom, like on Hamza's car.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's at the top of the shock, but you have to, you know, clearance your fender to tire to reach your arm in there and click it.
And then at that point, you know, you've got to adjust it, then put the wheel back on, see if you like it.
Yeah. Well, the wheel, I can keep the wheel on.
Okay. Okay.
You just got to jack it up.
Okay.
Which is... It's just enough of a pain in the ass. You know? I wish it was. I definitely wish the adjustment was on the bottom so I could just get under the car and click it. But yeah, what can you do?
On the 240, I have to climb in the back seat and pop the plastic trim piece off the parcel shelf.
Oh, yeah.
And then I can reach over the top and adjust.
So you could, if you wanted to, just leave that off there.
Yeah, I could just keep the rear seat folded up, which when I go to the track, I usually just leave that off.
Yeah.
So I can just click and adjust.
Yeah, so I think I do need to play around with the adjustment some more. I think stiffening it up some more will actually help. Because I think it rides better than the factory suspension, if I'm being honest.
I honestly really like BCs, and I know you're saying everybody has an opinion, but for the money,
yeah,
I don't think there's a better alternative.
I mean, especially for the money I've paid, because I have $500 into those coilovers.
Yeah, which, I mean, those extreme drops are only about, like, $1,100 new.
Right.
So, even then, I mean... If you were pricing them new, you can't get, like, KWs or...
No.
And, I mean...
I want Fortune coilovers. Like, they seem to be, pretty good as far as, like, your lower budget or, quote-unquote, budget. They're still, like, $1,500.
Yeah.
They got the digressive piston design.
Which is really nice for autocross and low-speed stuff.
Yeah, it's great. It's a good... A better design in general than, like, linear. But most... Shocks are digressive to a point anyways. Where was I going with that? Oh, but for the price, the BCs, I don't know. They do really good.
I really think they're good for the money.
Yeah.
Like, I spent $1,000 on mine, but that was like 6 years ago.
Yeah. I guess the only other complaint I might have about them is I feel like these ones are used, so I don't know exactly what kind of road conditions they'd seen over the years.
Yeah.
But they were pretty corroded, and that took a lot of cleaning to get those things, like, back to a functional state.
And the guy you got them from, did he have them, like, slammed all the way down?
Yeah. That's the other thing. I was surprised how much I had to lower those things to get it to sit where I wanted it to sit.
Which is funny, because they're the extreme drops.
Supposedly.
Yeah, because the bracket's in a different spot.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, supposedly.
Okay.
The only difference between the extreme drops or extreme lows and the regular is the shock body length.
Oh, okay. So the actual monotube is a different length.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I think they were the extreme lows, but I just think the extreme... They don't even offer them anymore. You can't get extreme lows at all anymore, as far as I can tell.
Wow, for any model?
As far as I can tell.
Wow.
I don't see them. I don't see them for the Fiesta anyways.
Yeah.
But because I had to order replacement rear shocks for that. That was part of the why I got them so cheap, because the one rear shock was leaking.
Right.
But I can just go to BC and order brand new shock assemblies that go in, they're threaded, you know?
Yeah.
And the new ones that I got were like, I don't know, a third of an inch longer.
Okay.
Like, they were a little longer.
Right.
But maybe half an inch.
They went in just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they fit exactly the same. It's just so, I think the extreme lows were just like, ever so slightly shorter dampers.
Interesting. So okay.
It's not that big of a difference.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting probably half inch lower than factory ride height.
Yeah, I can barely tell.
Yeah. I didn't want to go low.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not interested in fucking up my suspension geometry.
Well, and the car was low as it was.
Yeah, it's it doesn't like ride like a monster truck or anything.
Right.
So yeah, I didn't. It's still a daily driver. I still got to get over the speed bumps. I still got to get into steep driveways.
So how's your livability? Potholes, speed bumps, and whatnot.
Like I said, I think it does better.
That's amazing.
I think it does harsh, like bumps better.
That's. I mean, that's seriously. That's an amazing endorsement for any coilover.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, the way Ford tuned the suspension, the Fiesta ST, was a very, like, they did it very cheaply. You know, it's a budget car. So yeah. They just, like, ramped up the dampening rate on those shocks to the point where, and it's a linear shock. So the difference between a digressive and a linear shock is, linear is literally, if you look at it almost like a dyno graph, it's just a line that goes up at an angle.
Okay.
Digressive goes up really quick at the beginning and then levels out. So the reason that's good is because at lower speed stuff, that's your body control. That's your body roll issues.
Right.
And you want a lot of dampening there to keep the body from rolling.
Right, right. You know? Especially when you autocross.
Right, exactly.
Because you're in second and third gear the whole time.
Yeah. But then as you get up to higher speed stuff, that's your speed bumps. That's your, you know, if you're at a racetrack, the seams in the racetrack and stuff like that. You don't want that if it's linear. By the time you get up to those speeds,
yeah,
it's so harsh.
Yeah, the whole car will jump.
Yeah, the shock's not moving. So digressive, it doesn't go up that high. So you get this nice smoothness over rough bumps while still getting the body control on the low end. And I'm pretty sure those factory Ford shocks are linear and they're just stiffened up like crazy.
Interesting.
Because if you saw pictures of the car earlier when we were doing, or last year when I was racing,
yeah,
it leaned. It leaned like a freaking Miata.
Yeah, yeah, your back tire would just come off the ground.
Yeah, and it still does a little bit because it the suspension design, but not nearly like what it was before. Like, I mean, I was like rolling the tire under the car almost on corners. It was leaning so much.
Yeah, that it was leaning a lot.
Yeah, but then if I hit a harsh bump, it that softness wasn't there. It was hard as a rock. So I'm pretty sure that's what they did. They just made really stiff linear shocks, put them in there. And yeah, it does make the car feel fun for just like a daily driver. It feels really stiff. It feels really fast.
Right.
You know, and that's all they were concerned about. This car wasn't meant to put down lap records.
Right. But that's what you're going to do with it.
Right. That's what I want to do. So I got to change it up.
Yeah.
So that's what makes me think that these BCs, even though they don't really advertise as being a digressive valved, I think they are more digressive than they are linear.
That is interesting. I mean, BC, they've been doing coilovers for a while, so.
Right.
Yeah, it's just impressive that it feels better than factory, even if they did it cheaply. Like, I've never talked to anyone who put coilovers on their car and said, yeah, this feels more comfortable than stock.
Yeah. And I mean, if I had like a normal Fiesta and put these on, I'd be like, oh God, this thing rides like, you know, super harsh now.
Yeah.
But coming off of a Fiesta ST suspension, first gen,
yeah,
they switched it up at like 2017, I think.
Yeah,
and they redid the valving and the shocks and stuff. So I can't talk to that. But the 2014, 15, I think it was. Those ones are just super harsh.
Yeah, and it's interesting because my experience, I've put coilovers on two cars, my WRX, my 240. My 240 had blown shocks when I put it on, so
yeah.
It was a massive improvement.
Yeah,
but the WRX, I had K-Sports on it. Okay. Which, based on your description of linear, it sounds like that's what that was. Because at 90 miles an hour, if I hit a bump, the whole car left the ground.
Yeah, that's just the dampening level's so high, the shock's not moving. It's adding spring rate at that point.
Yeah, and it would just leap.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not fun. That's scary as shit.
It wasn't fun. I jumped a lane at 100 miles an hour once.
Yeah. So I haven't done any like super high-speed stuff with the Fiesta yet. I mean, highway driving, but I mean, yeah, I guess highway driving. I was doing like 90 down to, down to Colorado Springs. The aircraft didn't catch me, so I'm good.
Hey, there we go. You know, I wonder if I got caught.
I always see that sign, the speed checked by aircraft, and they right. do.
Yeah.
There's been people posting stuff on some of the forums about like when the plane's out.
Yeah.
Because that's all like publicly accessible information.
It is good that that's accessible.
Right.
But it's cool that, it sucks that they do that. I'm glad that it's a Cessna and not a helicopter.
Right.
Because that's more taxpayer money.
Yeah.
Like Virginia enforces it by helicopter.
Really?
But in Colorado, I know that they just know that, like, from the air, they can tell if you get from this point to this point within a certain amount of time, you're speeding.
Well, and also luckily going down to the Springs, there was like a Suburban doing like a $110.
Oh, nice.
So I was like, cool, I'm just going to follow you.
Yeah. See, I love when you get somebody like that.
Right?
Yeah. And then they get pulled over before you did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And now that they finally can finish that construction.
Yeah.
The road's not perfect, but that commute was so much better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't run into any traffic.
Like, I thought I was going to be so much later than I was.
Yeah. I know, I text you, I'm like, don't sleep in, boy.
Yeah, well, I woke up, I saw that 30 minutes after you sent it to me, and I was unfortunately very hungover, but I made it.
You did make it.
Yeah.
Yep.
I still have the bruise from getting drunk and falling off the e-scooter.
Oh, that was from? Did you take an e-scooter from downtown to your house again?
I took one from the Highlands to, like, North Pearl.
Okay, that's a nice little jaunt.
It was a decent one. Yeah. Jason hurt himself pretty badly.
Those things are dangerous.
They are. They really are. Because, I mean, you're not sober if you're riding one.
And also, their tires are, like, super tiny and hard. So you hit a rock, it just stops.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was behind Jason, and we're, you know, doing the go through the intersection thing. And I see him about to hit a curb, and I yell, watch! I didn't get the out in time. And he goes over the handlebars. The scooter's sparking along the sidewalk. And he was still able to walk that night, but I'm told the next day he was pretty injured.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I felt pretty bad on that one.
See, this is why I think they should have done bicycles.
They have bicycles.
Yeah, I do see them, but I feel like just from the beginning, it should have been bicycles. It
just should have been bicycles,
like,
yeah.
Because I feel like all of us rode bicycles as a kid. You know, we can pick that up even when we're drunk.
Yeah.
Not many of us had those kind of little scooter things.
Yeah, the little razors.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and even on the best day, razor scooter is nowhere near as safe as a bicycle is so much safer.
Right.
Like, you got larger wheels wrapped in actual rubber.
Yeah. Not plastic fucking roller skate wheels.
Yeah. Yeah. Those things would melt when we were kids if you got on the brakes too hard.
Right. Flat spot them a freaking Formula One tire.
Yeah, I had a few of them that would like chunk. Chunk, chunk.
Yeah, see, we knew about flat spotting way before we knew what it was in like Formula One.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to replace the whole wheel on one of those things.
Right, exactly. Oh, man. Well, anyway, I'm glad you made it out to Track Attack. I'm sorry you got a nice little road rash. But...
You know what? It was a blast of a night, and the next day was fun. So I had a good weekend.
Hey, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
So we were talking about your 86. We were talking about GR Corolla and GR from Toyota. This is a headline I just saw because a little behind the scenes. We did not come up with a docket for this episode. This is like on the fucking fly shit.
Which I think we're doing a decent job.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. We've already filled an hour. See, we can bullshit about anything.
That's true.
But anyways, I wanted to talk about a few little news things that we found. Oh, did our
camera? It just re-looped, so it makes 30-minute segments.
Oh, okay. We're also recording this with camera. Eventually, you are going to see our faces. We're going to do a video podcast to go along with the audio podcast. But we're still testing things out right now.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the testing phase.
Yeah, you might hear some technical difficulties. Anyways, the point was, I found this article that GR, Gazoo Racing, is making a single-make racing series for the GR86.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah,
because they've been Miata race series for how God knows how long. We've had Miata race series forever.
Yeah.
And I think that this car deserves its own race series.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Like, yeah, like you said, we have spec Miata.
Yeah.
And
this is just a Miata with a roof. Yeah. I have to turn off my AC to show off.
Right. Yeah, and if there's more of these like kind of like feeder series. Actually, I was watching the... first race of the Spec Miata series that they did at... Nope, can't remember it now. Oh, I know that track, too. I'll think about it later. Anyways, the point was the commentators were talking about how the Spec Miata series used to be, like, that's where you started.
Yeah, yeah.
But now there's actually drivers that are, like, coming to that series because it's such good racing.
Yeah, it's so tight.
Yeah, such wheel-to-wheel racing.
Yeah.
That's a destination race now.
Not a starting race, which we need more grassroots starting series.
Right.
To find the young talent.
Yeah, to find the young talent and also for guys like us that might want to still get into this.
Yeah, the not-so-young talent.
Yeah, exactly. The not-so-young, not-so-talented.
Now, that's a good name for a segment.
that's a slap sticker for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, the fact that the GR 86, which I don't really like calling it the GR 86. I don't know. I thought FRS was really just the best name.
FRS was great. Front engine, rear wheel drive, sports car. Yeah. BRZ, boxer engine, rear wheel drive, Zenith.
Oh, okay. Oh, Zenith. All right.
Zenith means like apex or top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I was kind of like, Zenith, huh? I don't know about that. Like, yeah. I like the BRZ. Is it the top sports car? No.
No, no, it's not. It's not by any means, but hey, Subaru, brag.
Yeah, right.
You know?
But the point is, like, it's a great car to get started in racing because it is a great chassis. I can't get over the one time I drove your car. I was like, oh, I get it now. I get why every journalist was fawning over this thing.
Right, because on track, it comes alive.
It really does.
And then it was funny because you rode with me home, and you're like, wow, you really can't accelerate onto the freeway. And I turned the air conditioning off, and you're like, right. That's some Miata shit.
It is. Yeah, that thing just makes no power.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
But yeah, that means it's perfect for a spec series.
It is. It is because it's about the driving and less about the car.
Yeah.
Because this car gives you the tools to do with the chassis whatever you need to do.
Right.
You can adjust the yaw on the fly. You know, you can have a lot of fun with this. You can throw it around, but you still have to be a driver to get the most out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still got that rear-wheel drive balance that requires, like, as much as, like, I like racing front-wheel drive cars, but it's not, I do want to transition to rear-wheel drive eventually.
Yeah.
Because I do realize, like, overall, I think rear-wheel drive takes more, I don't know. To get a lot out of a front-wheel drive takes a lot of talent.
Well, and you have to be perfect in your line.
Right.
Whereas I can kind of fuck my line up and slide into the correct line.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. You have a little bit more give in that.
Yeah, I can adjust my yaw more easily.
True. I mean, I kind of can, but it's all lift-off oversteer, which is so much different.
Right, it's harder to predict, and there's always handbrake, but that's just going to slow you down.
True. But the point is, like, I feel like just the front-engine, rear-wheel drive, little car is just the perfect... I mean, it's either this or carts, right? That's really...
This is a street-legal cart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's going to be the best way to learn, in my opinion. So I can't wait to see... I want to see these guys out, or these cars out racing. I want to see if it's like the MX-5 Cup or Miata Cup, where it's just that door-to-door bashing, crazy close racing.
I mean, I think it'll be amazing to watch.
Yeah.
I really do. I mean, every time we go to Track Attack, everybody in my class that's doing well is either in a Miata or in my car.
Right.
Although there's some BMWs that come out there and do really well.
Yeah. Yeah, surprisingly. You know, I'm kind of surprised BMWs do good there just because they're a little bit bigger, a little bit heavier.
But they've got that inline six torque.
And they got bigger tires.
Yeah. And they, I mean, factory BMWs just handle so well. They've got some body roll, but they handle so well.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I still kind of want a 335.
Like an E92?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that one was a spectacular-looking car to begin with.
Right.
And then you got the inline six, and that actually had a better 0-60 than the M3 of that year.
Did it?
Yeah, because the M3 was an NAV8.
Right.
And that had twin turbos.
Yeah. Yeah, those things scoop. It was funny, too, because, like, this was, like, 2-3 years ago. Maybe longer than that. When I was first started working at Aspen, when I still worked there, me and Chris were talking about how the 335 Coupe is basically a Supra.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
We're like, oh, Toyota stopped making the Supra, so BMW started making it.
Yep.
And then what ended up happening?
Yeah. BMW, yeah.
Yeah, BMW literally made a Supra.
Yeah, which, I mean, that I think was the best way to realize it. They were the only company still making inline sixes.
Yeah.
And I think that was the best way to have that come to fruition. And I know it pissed a lot of people off.
Right.
But there was no way you could succeed the 4th-gen Supra and not piss a lot of people off.
Yeah.
Like, that car was so iconic.
You know what? Let me go to my documents. I might have actually started a docket about this. Did we talk about last week how Mazda is no longer doing the rear-wheel drive Mazda 6?
There was a rear-wheel drive Mazda 6?
Yeah. They were making the inline six-cylinder. Remember
we were talking about that? Yeah, yeah.
Supposedly, that is not happening anymore.
That's a shame.
Episode 40. It looks like I did not take this down anywhere. So I don't know where I had that saved. But, yeah, I saw a thing that probably due to, you know, gas prices rising and more focus on electrification as usual, Mazda decided to scrap the plans for the rear-wheel drive Mazda 6 and the inline 6 along with it, it seems like.
That's a shame, because I wanted to see more inline 6s.
Right.
And I understand that from a production standpoint, it's more of a liability to spend R&D on that.
Right.
Because you can't put it in a front-wheel drive car.
Yeah.
it's pretty much exclusively for a rear-wheel drive sports coupe, or at least something all-wheel drive, but something with a long enough hood to mount that thing.
Inline sixes are long engines.
Yeah, and you've got to get your machining on your cams down. You've got to get your machining on your crankshaft down, because everything's long, and it can torque more easily.
Right.
But I love those engines. They sound and they feel amazing to drive.
Well, I do have some good news for you then.
Yeah?
Chrysler.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that parent company.
Yeah. They're moving away from V8s, even in the trucks, and they're replacing them with inline sixes.
That is interesting. And they could have done a V6 just like GM and Ford did, but they're going to go with an inline
six. They're going to go inline. I think they're going inline in the pickup trucks because they're going to have to fit a Cummins in there anyways.
Oh, so they're going to have the room in the bay.
Right.
But that means there's some swappable stuff coming. Right. Wow, Chrysler at the tip of innovation.
Right. So, on top of that, I kind of want to talk about this, too. You know what? Probably not going to get to all these little notes things, but this is fine. We have a bullshit episode.
Yeah.
Because I just came back from Florida, and where I did STX training, Worldpack STX Service Training Expo, I think is what it's called.
So cool that Worldpack does that.
Yeah, I just got back from Florida. This is a... for those who don't know, Worldpack is a parts supplier for... automotive shops.
Yeah.
They supply a lot of OEM parts to shops, but also just pretty much everything and anything.
Yeah, and they have good alternatives and low-cost stuff, which is excellent.
Yeah, a lot of shops, if you go to a shop, they probably at least know who Worldpack is.
Right. If you've ever had your valve cover replaced on a BMW, chances are it came from Worldpack.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If they do Euro stuff, they definitely know who Worldpack is.
Yeah.
Because like the likes of like Napa, AutoZone, Advance, they don't do much Euro shit.
They really
don't. And besides, you don't want those parts on your Euro car anyways.
Yeah, yeah. Having formerly sold them... I could say a lot of the Euro Advance parts were okay.
Yeah.
O'Reilly has some decent stuff. And Advance was adding some more parts to their roster when I left. But still, Worldpack was the place to go.
Yeah. Especially because you can just get OEM Euro stuff there.
Yeah.
Which is always the best. But anyways, so they also do a lot with training for technicians and service writers and all that stuff in the industry. So they put on this big expo, training expo. There were like 2,500 people there.
Wow.
It was huge.
That's a massive... So were you guys all like in a big seminar?
So it's a bunch of different classes.
Okay.
There was probably... God, there were probably 200 classes there over the 3 days.
Wow.
It was at the Orlando Marriott World Center, which is a giant hotel event center thing. Beautiful hotel. I hate Orlando. I'm not a Florida man so far. But I've only been to Orlando 3 times now.
It rained the whole time you were there, though, right?
The first few days. It was actually pretty nice there the last couple days.
Did you feel like a superhero at that altitude?
You know, I didn't drink all that much.
Okay.
Because we got some free drinks. They gave us like some free drink tickets.
Yeah.
But otherwise, at that hotel, oh my God, things were so expensive.
Oh, okay, you got it because it's the Orlando Marriott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted let's say a Jack and Coke, which I don't drink those, but that would probably have been like $11, $12.
Yeah, that's pretty pricey.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyways, one of the training classes I did, I did a Tesla class that was put on by Rich from Rich Rebuilds and his new partner. They have, Electrified Garage.
Okay.
So he partnered with this guy, Chris Slavo, who was a Tesla technician for a while. And they both were kind of tired. You know, Rich rebuilt that Tesla in his backyard.
Okay.
So he got to know what it's like to try to rebuild a Tesla without any factory support, which is nearly impossible.
Yeah, they try to make it impossible
because
you have to have the Tesla software to update everything.
So they put on a Tesla class there, which everybody knows my opinions on Teslas, on Elon Musk, on the company, and all that good stuff. But the fact is, they're out there, they need fixing.
Yeah.
And there's a chance to make money out there.
Well, and people are trying to autopilot them when that's not a thing yet.
Right.
And the cars are driving into things.
Right. Well, I'm not on the body side, but they still have their own issues as far as mechanical stuff. Anyways, I took that class. That was a great class. And the other class I took that first day was a hybrid class.
Okay.
So talking about hybrid technology and what's coming up and all that stuff. Here's the thing. And I'm not surprised, but every manufacturer out there is saying by 2026, 2025, whatever, our entire fleet's going to be either EVs or electric.
Yeah.
Or hybrid or electric.
Everybody's making those claims.
Yeah, everybody's making those claims. How they're doing that is going to be in the most, like, barely, like, just barely by the rules, like, bullshit way. And this goes back to Chrysler, talking about that in line 6. That's going to be a hybrid. Okay. But what they're doing is they are replacing the alternator with an electric motor.
Oh, and then it's technically a hybrid.
Technically a hybrid. So the alternator, or the electric motor, replaces the alternator and the starter. So they call it a, what do they call in that system? Belt, BAS, belt alternator starter.
Okay.
And it's actually, it's kind of cool because they're going to be running a, I think it was a 48 volt system. So it's very low voltage. Maybe it was like 64 volts.
Yeah, it's just about four times a typical automotive system.
Right. In the world of hybrids, that's nothing as far as voltage goes. But it's just going to be a big electric motor attached to the drive belt of these inline sixes. And it is going to give like an additional, like, what was it, 80 to 90 foot-pounds of torque and like 60 horsepower.
Okay. So it's not useless.
It's not useless. But when you talk about like any sort of mile per gallon gain or anything like that, it's not going to add that much. People have been doing this for a while. Remember the Suburban hybrid?
No, I don't.
Yeah, of course you don't, because it was a complete and utter goddamn failure. It got like 1 mile per gallon more than the fucking regular Suburban.
Because it was just, what, a cast iron LS with an alternator electric motor?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That's all it was.
And it was a GM electric motor bolted to the outside of the car, so it probably failed a lot.
Probably. Yeah, you don't see them very often anymore, because I'm sure the batteries were garbage, too.
Oh, yeah, I bet those batteries were crazy expensive.
Right. So pretty much what everybody's going to be doing is slapping a fucking motor where the alternator goes, putting a big battery in it, and saying it's a fucking hybrid.
That's hilarious. And you know what? I'm kind of happy about that.
Right? Because
that means we have internal combustion lasting a little bit longer.
Well, and I do want to kind of play around in that space about, like, once those things end up in junkyards.
Yeah.
All right, what can we bolt this basically electric supercharger to?
Yeah.
This is the realization of electric superchargers.
That's hilarious that it happened this way.
Right? Who thought it was going to do that? But yeah, that's going to be the future of Chrysler. So we're going to have some inline sixes and some weird electric motors to play around with from Chrysler in the future.
I think that's going to be cool. We're going to have some swap potential. And they're probably going to be, you know, overhead cam, aluminum.
Yeah, I would imagine.
So that's going to be neat. I mean, we'll probably see them in the next generation Jeep Gladiator.
Yeah, probably. I just, God, I hope they do better than they have with that fucking 3.8, the new V6 that's in those things.
Oh, yeah.
God, that thing's a pile of garbage.
Is it? Does it have a high failure rate?
Yeah. Oh, they're terrible.
And people are using it at like a truck, so.
Right.
They're stressing it.
Yeah. Yeah, they should have doubled down on their diesel options, but diesel's I feel like diesels still do good in trucks, though.
Yeah, and that's a truck.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, it's not a full, like, it's not a 250, but.
Right.
It's a truck.
Yeah.
And people are probably going to tow with it.
Yeah, even though they're not really meant for towing.
Yeah.
I was really excited when I saw the Jeep Gladiator at first, because I was like, okay. Like, I'm not a big Jeep fan, of course. I don't like Chrysler's reliability or their engines or anything like that. But then I was like, oh, they're making a diesel one. I had a Jeep Liberty Diesel.
Okay.
I actually really liked that little truck. That thing was good. It had an Italian-designed 4-cylinder turbocharged diesel.
Interesting. So it had pretty good mileage.
Yeah.
Like, how long did you have to go between fill-ups, like when you were driving a lot?
Oh, I couldn't tell you the exact numbers, but I think it got like 22 on the highway, 23 or 24-ish even sometimes.
Which for a Jeep.
Right.
And, I mean, it can probably do a little bit of mild towing with that.
Yeah. No, the thing was torquey as hell. It might have got a little bit better gas mileage than that. It's been years, so I don't quite remember. But I like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't a Chrysler designed engine. It was actually Italian and somehow was more reliable.
That really says a lot.
Right. So when I saw the Gladiator, I was like, okay, it's a truck. It can probably tow a little bit. It comes with a diesel option. Maybe that'd be something I'm interested in. But then they just, of course, fucked up the execution. They dormanded it.
They dormanded it up. We're using that adjective.
Yes. Oh, man. Wow, that was quite a tangent right there.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, it's always fun to shit on Jeeps when you live in Colorado.
Right? Started talking about inline sixes and Toyotas and ended up shitting on Jeeps.
Yeah, talking about Italian diesels.
Yeah. It's amazing where we get sometimes. All right, let's do the lightning round real quick, and then we can call it a podcast, because there are a few little things I want to mention. One, any of you F1 fans out there, F1 is going to Las Vegas in 2023.
This is awesome.
Right?
It's so close to us. I know. That's a really cheap flight.
Yeah, especially for us, because... Or drive. We can actually drive there.
Yeah, you can drive through weird-ass southern Utah and get there quickly.
Yeah. I am so stoked. They're going to go down the strip.
What?
On the main straight. The main straight's going to be like 4 miles long or some bullshit.
Oh, that's going to be amazing.
Like, look at this long-ass fucking straight.
God, imagine the gambling based around this.
Right? Oh, man. And I... 3.8 miles.
Wow. But how fast are they going to be? Imagine how hard those wear sensors are going to be sparking when they're coming into break after a four-mile straight.
Oh, yeah. And you know Las Vegas streets aren't that great.
No, so they're not.
They're going to be fucking bouncing and scraping. It's going to be awesome. Oh, and it's a night race because it's Las Vegas.
So all the neon's going to be on. They're going to be whirling past all these casinos.
Uh-huh.
They're probably going to have the Bellagio fountain running a show as they fly by it.
I would imagine.
Oh, that's going to be an incredible spectacle.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are definitely going to this next year.
Yes, we're going for sure. This. Yeah.
I don't care what it costs. I haven't been to Vegas in a while since SEMA, honestly. And it's time to go back anyways.
Yeah, this is worthwhile. And I mean, God, I wonder how much any hotel room on the strip is going to cost.
Oh, God. Especially facing the track.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot. Maybe we'll stay at the Hard Rock just off the strip.
There you go. Yeah. I'm fine with staying in a cheap hotel, walking to the fucking race. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome. When you come down from this altitude, you can walk miles in Vegas without getting tired.
Right. While drinking a drink.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you can just walk around Vegas with a drink.
Yeah.
Like, you should be able to in any state.
Thank you. Yes. You should be able to anywhere if you're not being belligerent.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
But yeah. it's just another reason to get messed with.
Yeah, pretty much. Anyways. Yes. Las Vegas. Formula One. Fuck Miami. We're going to Vegas.
Yeah, I'd rather go to Vegas than Miami.
Yeah.
It's a lot less sticky.
And Circuit of the Americas is an amazing track. I'm glad it exists. But street circuits are way better than FIA-approved racetracks.
Well, and it's so cool. There's more character. They're going to have to set up. They're going to have to be there beforehand to set up.
Yeah.
And know, like, oh, well, okay, the pavement changes here.
Yeah. I mean, like, I am kind of curious. I've never looked into just what kind of preparation they do for street circuits, you know, because it takes a lot to get a track ready for a Formula One car.
Yeah.
To make it safe.
You know? They're really low, and especially with these new cars.
Yeah.
They spark off the ground every time they brake.
Right. But even then, like, you know, if you go to a actual circuit designed for Formula One cars, there's big runoffs. There's lots of safety.
Yeah.
Street circuit, that's a road.
Yeah. That's where we're going to be standing.
Right. Like, I've been down that road. It's a shitty road.
Yeah.
I don't know how you make that safe for 200 miles an hour.
Vegas money, baby.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Lightning round. Right. Next up, 2024 Ford Mustang has been spied. Will supposedly still continue offering a V8.
And looks like it's still a coupe.
Yep.
So we're still going to have a coupe option in addition to the 5-door electric that bears the same name.
Right.
I'm excited about this. I mean, the Mustang, we need to have a Mustang that is a Mustang for as long as possible.
Yeah, I've never owned a Mustang, and that's kind of surprising because I've always liked Mustangs.
Yeah, yeah, I honestly, ever since 2015 hit and they had independent rear suspension, I've wanted one of these.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a little kid, I wanted an SN95.
Yeah.
You know, in yellow. Like.
Oh, nice, okay. Yeah.
That was like, ask my sister. Like, when I was really little, that's the car I wanted. I don't know why.
But every time it went by.
Yep.
I was the fourth-gen Camaro kind of guy.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
I never got into the Camaros. I was more of a Mustang guy.
And modern Mustang versus Camaro, I would take the Mustang 10 times out of 10.
Right.
And because you can't see out of the new Camaros.
Yeah. Even though the new Camaros, like the LT1 package and shit, or I can't keep track of
the ZL1?
ZL1, yeah. I think that's what it is. That's a fucking potent car.
Yeah, it's got a lot of power. And I mean, I've driven the SS. I drove a 2010 and a 2012 SS. They handle really well. I describe it as driving a German tank.
Yeah.
Because it handles really well. Everything's really tight. And you're looking at the world through these little bulletproof peepholes. Through
portholes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I drove a 2019 Mustang and it's tossable.
Yeah.
Like it's not like the BRZ, but the front end bites when I want to turn. I drove it in the mountains and it was a convertible.
Yeah.
And even then, it feels stiff and responsive.
Yeah. I drove one of the 5 liter ones when they first brought the 5 liter back.
Oh yeah. Yeah. When it still had the solid axle.
Or no, I guess it was when they switched over to the independent rear.
Okay.
It was that first year of that one. Sorry. Because I forgot they did the 5 liter and the solid axle
in like 2013, I think.
Yeah,
and then 2015 it got the IRS.
But yeah, I drove the first gen IRS one or first year, and yeah, I was strangely impressed.
Right,
I was like, this. It didn't feel like you said the Camaro feels like a big muscle car.
Right,
this felt like a sports car.
Yeah, it's the new Mustang is a world class sports car. It really is no longer a pony car.
Yeah.
To be honest, the Camaro is a Holden, and it can handle.
Yeah.
Challenger is a pony car.
Yeah. The Challenger is just its own thing.
Yeah.
It's an old Mercedes chassis that they made just work as much as they could.
It's a 700 horsepower recliner.
Right. It is. But yeah, it is good to know that the 5 liter will continue on for a little bit longer. So we will have, and I'm curious just to see what kind of update they do with the body and everything too.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what it looks like because I feel like it looks more and more European.
Yeah.
With each passing year, I'm hoping that we get another flat plane crankshaft option. That would be right. Awesome because the GT350 was kind of short lived.
Yeah.
It was really expensive, so I get that they didn't sell that many of them.
Yeah, it was a halo car. You know.
Yeah, yeah, and now they've got the GT, and then they had the GT500. I think that's gone now too.
Yeah.
But yeah, something I'd love to see an option to get like a flat plane crank version of this.
Right.
Because I know with the GT350, they said it sounded too European, and they had to redesign the exhaust manifold to make it sound more like an American car.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that, because I know they were talking about how just crazy it sounded and everything.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they were like, no, this doesn't sound muscle car-y enough.
Yeah, yeah, so they had to give it a little bit of a rumble.
Yeah. But I like that high screaming V8.
Right? Yeah. Like a Lotus Esprit going by.
Right?
But yeah.
I mean... Think about it. Like, I think the Mustang is it's due for its generational shift anyways, because the Corvette did it with the C8.
That's true.
You know, they were like, okay, this is no longer the big fat American, you know, sports car.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be, it's a mid-engine supercar now.
It's an American Ferrari.
Yeah, and you have to be a pretty small dude to fit in there properly.
Yeah.
You know, and they really were like, we're moving away from our target market and we're moving into a new target market.
Yeah.
And I think the Mustang's got to do the same, actually.
I do hope that we still have a clutch pedal option.
Yeah.
Like, I'm hoping we don't lose that.
I can't see them getting rid of that. Just because this seems more like a refresh than a brand new thing. So,
yeah.
You know, the drivetrains should carry over, I would imagine. So I don't think we're going to get rid of that. I think people would just be... Yeah, they'd alienate way too many people.
They would. I mean, the GT500 was automatic only, so...
Yeah. Well, it was dual clutch, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a dual clutch, yeah. I mean, it was so you could drag race with it.
Yeah. I mean, I always make a distinction between automatic and dual clutch. Those are much different animals.
That's fair, yeah.
It's not a slush box.
It's not, yeah. There's no torque converter.
Right. Moving on. Lightning round. Lotus, what are you doing? That's the headline of this. Lotus Elettri. Elettri?
I don't know how to say that.
Just put a C in there. Call it electric already.
I'm glad that they are keeping the theme with
the
letter E as the start of all their models. And that's about all I like about this.
Right.
Lotus is supposed to be a minimalist brand, a lightness is speed brand. This is an SUV.
Yeah, this is a 900 horsepower electric SUV.
Yeah.
That is not what I would expect out of Lotus. But I will say two things, to be fair. Out of all of the luxury SUVs, this is by far the lowest and sleekest one of, like, the, you know, the Maserati or your...
Oh, the Lamborghini Urus.
Yeah, Lamborghini Urus or whatever. This is the most sports car-ish of them all.
It looks nice. I like those wheels. I like the roof line as much as I can like an SUV's roof line.
Right.
but it's just, it feels wrong.
It does. But here's where I will, the other point I was going to make. Remember when Porsche came out with an SUV?
Yeah, that's true.
But then they were like, hey, we sell so many of these that we can keep making the 911.
You know, if we can get factory street legal go-karts from them because this funds that.
Right.
Okay, I can take it.
That's my hope is. I'm hoping this, a bunch of dumb rich people
right.
buy this.
We see these parked like three deep at Whole Foods.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that way I can have a next gen Elise.
That's true. I've wanted an Evora for a while now.
Yeah.
I would love to daily an Evora. I think that would be a blast.
I got in an argument the other day with Aaron, actually.
Really?
I was like, I want an Evora and I want the automatic. That car is not the ultimate sports car. That is not. The Evora is an awesome daily driver.
It is, and I will say this. I haven't driven one. If you have a manual, there is not enough room for there to be a dead pedal. So when you take your left foot off the clutch, there's nowhere to put it.
Yeah.
Because they said that they gained something like 11 or 15 additional degrees of steering angle by shaving the pedal tunnel.
Oh, really?
Like that? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so they chose that over driver comfort, which is a very Lotus thing to do.
Yeah, which I love. I love that about them.
Yeah. Personally, I'd go for the manual, but I recognize that I will be less comfortable in it.
Well, here's the difference. If I was getting the Evora 400, GT 400 or 400, whatever it is, the newest one.
Right.
That's like the
supercharged
the
one.
The upgraded supercharged and all that kind of stuff. I want a manual because that thing is an amazing rocket.
Yeah.
But I want a first gen, non-supercharged, automatic Evora, and I want to fucking daily it till the day I die.
Well, and it's got a Camry engine.
Exactly. It'll run forever.
Yeah, it will. It will.
It's still a sports car.
Yeah.
It's still going to handle like a Lotus.
And the rear windshield, I don't know if you, in an Exige, there is a rear windshield that only looks at a supercharger.
Yeah.
It doesn't look out of the back of the car.
Right.
Which is funny because DOT requires it to have a mirror.
Yeah.
So you look at the mirror, you cannot see behind you. You just see your supercharger. But with the Evora, there's a split. So you can actually see the engine below and out of the back of the car if you look up top.
Yeah.
So it's a lot more usable. The back seat, you know, you'd never want to have anybody sit back there.
Right.
But you've got a place to put your helmet when you're not wearing it.
Yeah. Or groceries.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Like, to me, it's just, it'd be the perfect, like, fun daily.
They are a blast. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, but the closest I've ever been to heaven is turn 12 at Road Atlanta in an Evora.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can just go flat out if you take the right line, and you look back and you see the people in the big V8 cars just disappear after they ran up behind you on the straight before turn 10.
That's what a Lotus should be.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I wanted a Lotus sports car, I'm getting an Exige.
The Exige is excellent,
you know,
but it's not daily livable.
No, exactly, it's not.
Yeah.
But this is enough, like...
I would actually love to see you get into an Exige.
I've been in an Exige.
Really?
Yeah, I fit pretty well. Getting in and out, though, is a bit of a prank.
Because the tub is so high...
It's so high.
And the roof is so low.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to, like, do, like, a Zoidberg crab jump.
Yeah, you do. There was... I can't remember the guy's name. He had a... It was an orange Exige.
Okay.
They brought into Aspen a few times. You know me in orange.
Oh, yeah.
And I love Exiges.
Right.
I fell in love with that car.
Was he able to get over that hump getting into Aspen?
Yeah.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. It actually, like, it drove in just fine.
Okay.
Like, sweet. I think Porsches have harder problems getting in that shop.
Yeah, I scraped.
Right? Yeah. But, yeah, I fell in love with that car. But I was like, I had to sit in it at least once.
Yeah.
Because I was like, do I fit? And I was like,
with the roof on and everything, you were comfy.
Yeah.
Nice.
I couldn't wear a helmet. There's no way I could put a helmet on in that car.
Okay.
Which would be a problem.
Yeah. Well, you take the roof off.
Right, true. Well, not an Exige.
Yeah, it's a hard panel. It removes.
No, because it has the scoop.
Yeah, you lose power.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I didn't think the roof was even removable on that one.
It's a removable hard top.
Oh, okay. Because I knew it wasn't the Elise, but I thought the Exige. Yeah, because
the Elise has the rag top.
Yeah. That's hilarious. You lose power.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyways, yeah. Lotus, just please still make affordable sports cars.
Yes, if you're going to make an SUV, use it to fund the fun stuff we love.
Yeah, exactly. Do the Porsche approach. All right, two little things, and then we're going to call it a day. We got an auction watch on two cars. I need to get Aaron that sound effect. anyways, two we're going from like a probably $1 million SUV or whatever the fuck that is to two very which were cheap cars at one point. First up, we got a 1992 Sentra SER on Bring a Trailer. This one has already ended. This is a B13 Sentra. My opinion, the best Sentra.
I mean, it looks really cool. Yeah, and it's the old boxy one,
mm-hmm.
which is cool.
Yep, it's that early 90s boxiness. You know me. I love this era. SR20, 5-speed manual transmission.
Had 445 miles on it.
Yeah, 445 miles. This is basically a brand new Sentra.
Wow.
Just sold on Bring a Trailer. Sorry, you can't buy this one for $33,500.
Wow.
Which, when you adjust for inflation, is pretty much what its MSRP was when it fucking came out.
So it's fair, because it's a new car.
Right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're basically buying for a brand new car.
I wonder if they had the window sticker.
Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure somewhere in this, if we go to the actual Bring a Trailer, there was like, you know, tons of documentation. Look at this interior. It's brand new.
Yeah, that looks amazing. And that's 90s plastic, and it looks like that.
Right? I'm sure it'll still crumble under, you know, the lightest touch.
As soon as you pull outside, yeah. The dash cracks.
Exactly. Oh, God, wouldn't that suck?
Yeah. It was like, well, look, I just bought this perfect... Oh, it's cracked.
Yep. But for those that don't know, just real quick, the Sentra SER was actually meant to compete with, like, the BMW E30 and shit at the time.
Wow.
You know? And it did. Like, it had 140 horsepower.
Yeah, I think the E30 M3 only made, like, 180-something.
Right, and that was the M3.
Yeah.
The regular fucking E30. You know, what was the performance E30 that wasn't the M3?
Oh, I'm not sure, in the 80s.
It was like a 318, or was it a 325?
I think there was a 318 and a 325.
Okay.
But those had inline sixes.
Yeah. But I'm sure those made about 140 horsepower, 150
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah, they were a little torquey, but yeah.
So, yeah, the I didn't think the SER, the B13, had as much of a following as it does, but clearly somebody really wanted this car for $33,000.
And congrats to the person who bought that.
Yep.
I would be scared to drive this.
Yeah, this is going to be a museum piece now.
Yeah.
You know?
It needs to be in a car vault somewhere. It
belongs in a museum.
Yeah.
But... I still want to get a B13, but even the prices of, like, clapped-out ones have started climbing. You can't get one of these that is, like, worth a shit for, like, less than $8,000 now.
90s Nissans, man.
Yeah,
Who knew they'd shoot up like they have?
And you know what's funny? If you want even better suspension in this era and that same engine, get an Infiniti G20.
That's true, and there were more of those.
There were more of those, and they're cheap as fuck still.
Yeah, they had SR20s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to have some G20 blades on my old 86.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I had a first-gen G20, P10. I loved that car.
Yeah. They had some character.
Yeah, it was a great car. Anyways, and we got one more auction watch, which is this one. I don't even know why this is up to $5,222.
I think this thing is just a pure novelty. It's a pink Geo Metro, a 93 Geo Metro convertible.
Yeah.
In 5-speed, and it's in that 90s pastel pink. I almost want to see that crazy whirl graphic on the side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to do this, do the full-on, like, solo cup design.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't hate Geo Metros because basically underneath this is the Geo Metro is basically a Suzuki Swift.
Okay.
And they made a Suzuki Swift GTI was their like performance version with a little dual cam motor in it.
Okay.
And I think they made a Geo Metro with that engine in it, but they're super rare. They made like a performance Metro.
I remember the Geo Storm.
Yeah.
Being that little sports coupe.
I like the Geo Storm.
It had a cool body line to it.
Right?
Yeah.
That was another, I think that was a Suzuki. That may have been a Zuzu. No, that's an Isuzu.
Okay.
The Geo Storm is an Isuzu Impulse.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, because Geo was basically GM's brand that brought in foreign cars, branded them as domestic cars, and sold them.
Sold them super cheap, and they got great gas mileage.
Yeah, because GM couldn't make a fucking... four-cylinder engine to save its goddamn life for a while.
This was up against, like, the Cavalier.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> but, yeah, somehow this pristine 36,000-mile 93 Geo Metro is current bid $5,222. This ends in 2 days, so depending on when we get this podcast up, you might still bid on this if you really want a Metro convertible.
You know, you'd turn some heads driving this thing.
You would.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if I saw somebody driving this, I'd stop and talk to
them. Yeah, I'd say hey to him for sure.
Because I'm just like, how? Why?
Yeah.
I have so many questions.
How do you have a perfect Geo Metro? First of all, you have a running Geo Metro.
Right.
Second of all, this thing is in just amazing shape.
But we were joking about, before the show, we were looking at this. And it's like, well, with gas prices the way they are now,
yeah,
this might not be a bad investment.
When $5,200, it's hard to find a used car for that cheap.
Right?
Yeah.
Let alone one that's going to get you that kind of gas mileage, and it's a convertible. I
bet it's super cheap to insure this thing because it's not worth anything, according to Kelley Blue Book.
Yeah, exactly. According to the insurance company, this is worth $5.
Right.
So I like how it says under origin, American. Bring a trailer. Come on. You have to know this is a Suzuki underneath, right? Well,
technicalities.
This is made in Japan.
That's funny.
But yeah, like I was saying, the actual Suzuki Swift hatchback or the Geo Metro hatchback, I have a little respect for those.
Okay.
Because they're a fun little hatchback.
Yeah.
You know, but the convertible just takes any cool thing and this makes the chassis like, you know, it's...
It's like wet spaghetti.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
And this one's pink.
Yeah.
So it's...
Not that there's anything wrong with pink cars. You like pink cars, that's fine. But this is just like, man, I just... In 93, if you bought this car as a man...
Oh, yeah, you would catch endless shit.
Yeah. This would be worse than buying a Miata.
Yeah, there was no wokeness in 93.
No.
No. Yeah. People would be like, oh, that says too much about you.
Right.
Yeah.
But nowadays, with like Radwood and stuff coming around, like these things are actually getting a little bit of a cult following again.
Yeah. It would actually be funny to see Machine Gun Kelly in this thing in his pink guitar.
Right?
Yeah.
God, I just, for the first time, heard one of his new songs today.
Really?
Came on the radio with A Day to Remember.
What'd you think?
It was actually pretty good. I was pretty shocked.
I think it was cool he was able to switch genres like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I was like, okay. It wasn't my favorite. It wasn't like the best... whatever metal genre you want to call, you know, like Bring Me the Horizon or A Day to Remember or something like that. Or I guess it was Bring Me the Horizon he did the song with. He's more like pop punk.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Blink-182's sound.
A little bit, yeah. But anyways, I was fairly impressed.
And to be honest, when he got into the rap war with Eminem, I think Eminem is best when he's pissed off.
Yeah.
And that was the best Eminem I'd heard in years.
Hey, well, hey, we got some good Eminem out of it. So, yeah. Can't complain there.
No.
All right. Well, I think we have done it. We are at 1 hour and 42 minutes. So,
with almost no planning.
Without no planning.
Yeah.
It just goes, why do I even plan this?
Yeah. It's just all organic.
Yeah. We can just bullshit our way through this anyways.
This is great. We got to do a take a shot every time we stumble podcast.
No, that'd be a terrible idea. We'll be fucking, oh God, we'd be so wasted.
We'd have to crash on Hamza's couch.
Right? Yeah, this might be the last podcast from the condo studio. That's about all I'll say out of that. We'll have some more on that in the future. We might get another one here. There's a big changes in the future, and I am super excited for them.
I'm very excited. This is going to be a really fun year for Religion of Speed.
It really is. But I know I've made this promise before, but eventually you will see what I'm talking about on YouTube. I have people on my side now that are going to keep me, are going to make sure the YouTube stuff actually happens.
So. Yeah, we're all going to pressure each other into making great content for you guys.
Yes.
And making sure that we have a ball doing it.
Yes. I mean... No offense to any of you listeners, but the most important thing for me is, you know, me, you, Chris, and our other friends who are joining us with this, which you'll see in the video.
Yeah.
And, you know, going out and having fun and doing fucking crazy car shit.
Yeah. And we like to bring you guys along on the journey with us.
Yeah. And hopefully encourage you to do the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's all about.
We need more people out there doing reckless stuff in cheap cars.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. This needs to be a bigger cultural phenomenon than it already is.
Right? Even if gas prices are high, we can buy Geo Metros and we can do crazy shit.
That's true. Reverse donuts all day long.
Yep, exactly. All right. If you want to see any more of us, of course, you can always follow us on social media at religionofspeed.co. That is on Facebook and Instagram. Religionofspeed.com is where you can find the show notes for the show and everything else that has to do with Religion of Speed. There we go. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
You may have noticed religionofspeed.com was down for a little bit. Yeah, apparently I didn't update my payment information on Google Domains. Oops.
We all do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's backup. And like I said, YouTube stuff is coming. Just give us a minute on that and I'll be promoting the shit out of it. So that just leaves one more thing, Chris.
We need to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song, Colors. It's off the album Traveler Part 1. And you can find them at wheelstheband@bandcamp.com.
Perfect. Love it. Until next time, heretics, thank you for listening. Peace.